So when we go through pregnancy postpartum, and it's the most intense physical change and the biggest life change, and it comes with so much joy and wonderful life-changing things, but there's also a lot of loss. You know, when we have this like language of get your body back, like we're really wanting our lives back in a sense.
Welcome to the Rise Rooted podcast. If you're a mom who feels like you've lost yourself along the way, you have landed in the right spot. I'm your host, Catherine Middlebrooks, founder of BRB Yoga and postpartum health expert who has helped thousands of moms rebuild their bodies after baby. Each week, join me and my guests as we explore ways to create health in mind and body so that you can live a life you love. Welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to share today's interview with Lindsay Stenovic with you. Lindsay is a registered dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor who is passionate about helping mothers and parents reduce stress and guilt around food and movement by helping them restore trust in their bodies, take weight obsession out of the equation, and by redefining health and self-care so that each mother and in turn each family can thrive. She's a podcast host, a frequent speaker, and the creator of intuitiveeatingmoms.com online programs. Lindsay lives in San Diego, California, with her husband and two spunky boys who are 5 and 2. We cover so much in a short time, ranging from body image to our relationships with food. But the thing that kept coming up, the theme that ran throughout the conversation, was the power of being embodied. Stepping out of your head and instead dropping into the wisdom and the signals that your body is giving you. When we allow ourselves to tap into the signals of the body, we begin to act on feeling rather than thinking. And I think the best example that we talked about of this was when it comes to exercise, right? When you're in your head and you think your way through what you need to do to exercise, very often it is very structured and rigid. I need to do this amount of running this many days a week. That is coming from your head. When you drop into your body and you can start sensing what type of movement would feel nurturing and restorative to my body today, the answer may be very different than what your head would be telling you. So I'm excited to explore that idea in this conversation, among many other topics. And I know that embodiment and being in your body is going to be a recurring theme in our conversations on this show. So enjoy this interview with Lindsay Stenovic. Hi there, Lindsay. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm excited.
Me too. So I want to focus our conversation today on how we feel about our bodies and how we relate to food. When I think about these topics, it really seems like if we can get to a good place on these, it really opens up so much for women. It can impact all of their relationships. It can free up so much of their mental capacity. So I would love to start with one of the most common questions that I receive when working with women that I love the way that you speak about this topic is, how do you begin to accept your body as it is with the changes it has gone through during pregnancy and childbirth?
Yeah, that is one of the most common questions I get too. And the answer is like not as simple as I think maybe we'd all like it to be. You know, I think that sometimes when we're just wanting to be in acceptance and wanting to be okay with all the changes we've experienced, we want someone to kind of come to us and give us like some magic words or tell us exactly kind of do these steps and you'll be fine. And it's just more complicated than that. And that doesn't mean we can't get there. But it is more complicated than that. And I think one of the things that I talk about a lot that maybe we don't hear as often is that I think in order to move into acceptance and maybe even beyond that into appreciation and love and, you know, being in a more loving relationship with our bodies is to first just be able to acknowledge that this is hard. This is complicated. There's nothing wrong with any of us, you know, for struggling with changes we might have experienced in our bodies. to feel dissatisfaction and to just practice just starting out, just being with that. Like, yeah, this is hard. This is a hard thing to do. I don't want to feel this way. You know, I want to be in acceptance, but first I have to allow myself to just acknowledge how I'm feeling. And perhaps even allowing yourself to grieve a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of, you know, especially when we're thinking about the transition into motherhood, or, you know, any pregnancy, you know, postpartum experience or beyond, our body image experiences are often mirroring what's going on in our lives. So it doesn't mean that the way we feel about our bodies is not real in terms of like aesthetics. There's a really big cultural piece here that kind of tells us like what is okay and what's not okay, even though those are not truths. They're the messages we hear. So that's very real, but it also often mirrors kind of what we're going on in our lives or what we're experiencing in our lives. So first is starting with acknowledgement, being with that kind of difficulty of the grieving and feeling the feelings, you know, that kind of thing. And there's a lot more to this, but I'll say kind of that next thing to sort of imagine is perhaps even being in what I call a coexisting relationship with your body to start. When we want to develop trust in a relationship with someone else, trust comes with lots of little touch points of experiences with each other, and you start to trust each other more and more and more. So if we think of that as like a metaphor for our relationship with our bodies, especially when we've been through times of change, we're going to need lots of little touch points. But if we're feeling really not in acceptance of our bodies, we may just have to be in this coexisting kind of agreement, so to speak, to start out, where basically there's a respect for our bodies, and we can kind of be okay with the way it is, in the sense that we don't have to love it or, you know, think amazing things about it all the time, but just start with, okay, I choose to let my body be here without acting out in a way that may actually harm it or kind of disconnecting from my body further, which might be like restricting our intake or like over exercising and, you know, not listening to our bodies in that way. I could go like on and on and on, but that's kind of the way I usually start this conversation.
Yeah, I love that those points. Both of those points are so important. You know, the first one about really grieving, I think that is so important, especially when we live in a world that gives us the predominant message is that we are supposed to bounce back, right? Like, which is this very going back to the past, like you're supposed to get back to this point where you were before you went through any of these major changes, when in reality, everything about your body is different. The cells are different. The shape of the body is different. Your muscles, the organs, everything is different. And so it seems so much more adaptive and healthy to really allow this shifting of thinking of like that body is gone. Like it is the past, and I need to now figure out how to relate to this body that I have in this moment.
Yes. And it's really a different way of, like, if you think about so many instances from a cultural perspective, where we're experiencing change in our bodies and what is generally the message, like starting with puberty, you know, it's sort of a little more, we have a little more support during that time, but it's a very difficult time, obviously, to go through changes. Although generally, maybe some people get the feedback of like, it's okay, you know, your body's supposed to change, but that's like the highest, you know, incidence of, you know, eating disorders starting and people starting diets and things like that. Basically, the message is also kind of, if it's not changing in this way, you might want to control that, you know, kind of have this illusion that you can control it. And we get this kind of messaging over and over again throughout our lives. So it's not new when it comes to pregnancy and postpartum, like leading up to weddings. Now there's this huge push for that, this huge transition in your life. You know, you are going through a lot of change when you go through that. And there's the messaging of having to have a certain body, like whatever your body is, it's supposed to be different when you're getting married, in theory. College, even like divorce or breakups, menopause, you know, all of these times where it's like our bodies just might be changing because of where we are in the life cycle, our stage of life, but also change in our, on our kind of relational lives too. It's sort of this like, hey, you know, you might be able to feel better. Like you might feel uncomfortable right now in general or with your body, and you might be able to feel better with this sort of idea of controlling it. So when we go through pregnancy postpartum, and it's the most intense physical change and the biggest life change. And it comes with so much joy and wonderful, like life-changing things, but there's also a lot of loss. You know, when we have this like language of get your body back, like we're really wanting our lives back in a sense. And because the life as we knew it has changed completely. We have, quote, we have kind of lost a lot. Not that we haven't gained a lot, but we can sort of hold both of those experiences next to each other because we have to, because that's how it's, you know, that's happening.
Yeah, you have no choice in the matter. Yeah, it is going that way or not. Yeah, and I love that notion of relating to your body. This is actually something that I talk a lot about with my students too, is because I think so many of us, you know, you talk about coexisting with your body. And I do think so many of us, especially if we are feeling like our body is not working the way we want it to or looking the way we want it to, we will disconnect. I use this analogy of like being, you're like a head, a disembodied head. You're like, I'm just in my brain and I'm just ignoring everything below my neck. And when you think about it in terms of a relationship, it's so powerful, I think, because if you think about any other relationship in your life, if you give your husband the silent treatment or you try to like beat him into submission, it's so ineffective. And if you think like, oh, that's effectively what I'm trying to do with my body, no wonder it isn't working. No wonder I'm feeling really stuck and like I can't stop thinking about this, right? It's instead, if you can start shifting into those feelings of like, okay, it's you and me. We're in this together. And I always like to give an example of giving compassion. Maybe your body isn't doing what you want it to do physically. That's what often happens with my students. Their body feels broken physically. But if you can give it some compassion like you would to your kid, it really shifts that whole perspective. Like, oh, this is a part of me that actually needs extra care and attention during this time, not to be like beat up and told that it's not doing the right thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's so many great examples when you think about just being in relation with others. I'll often use the example of having a coworker that you just don't enjoy very much. And, you know, if you ruminate over that and you think about how awful this coworker is and you just kind of pick out every little thing they do that annoys you, like they're just going to annoy you more. It's just going to get worse. And it's really just hurting your well-being in the workplace. But if you can be in acceptance of who that person is and try to just coexist with them, even just to start out, you don't have to be their best friend. You don't have to hang out at happy hour every night, you know, whatever. You can just be aware of how much maybe you are ruminating over that and notice that's happening and see what happens if you let go of that a little bit. What happens if you even start to acknowledge some of the things that are okay about this coworker? You know, again, it doesn't have to be, oh, now I love this coworker. It can just be, oh, I do appreciate that they say hi to everyone in the office every morning, you know, whatever. So using these sort of examples can be little ways that we can start to plant those seeds with our body. If like, yeah, okay, it does kind of show up for me like every day, you know, it does kind of, you know, do X, Y, and Z. It did, you know, do this for me or that for me. And just allowing it to be there. And I think one more thing to mention, when we're talking about acceptance. It's just that a lot of people feel like acceptance has to equal agreeance. So if you're feeling pain in your body, you don't have to agree that that is a wonderful thing. It's not, you know, it's not a wonderful thing, but it is what is. And so that is such a, it's a practice of moving towards acceptance of what is, which is not the same as agreeing and feeling like everything's fine. That is, I think, an important distinguishing piece there too.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. I always go to my husband relationship, right? Like I can not be happy with things that are going on, but I can be mindful of one, my role in it, and also that we are in this situation together. Yeah. Can you speak just briefly to the role of body positivity in all of this? Because you consciously use the word acceptance and not self-love. And so I'm wondering how that body positivity message plays into it, because I imagine it is another pressure that we can put on ourselves.
Yes. You know, it's wonderful if we feel positive about our bodies. Great. There's nothing wrong with that. Or if we feel love, you know, towards our bodies, or we love our bodies, that's wonderful. And that's not going to feel accessible in the world we live in to every person at every life stage and every circumstance, which is really sad. You know, that is kind of the difficulty that we do all kind of deal with, I think, from a cultural perspective. Even further than that, our relationship to our bodies and ourselves is so much more complicated than that. You know, it's the same as expecting yourself to feel happy all the time. Like, that wouldn't actually be healthy to just be like, I'm feeling happy all the time and I'm only going to think positively. There's actually a thing called toxic positivity. And anyone who has experienced depression and has been told to just think positively knows exactly how that feels. But you don't have to experience depression to kind of understand that concept either. So we may have moments of feeling positive. May have moments of feeling love. We may have moments where we feel hate or, you know, very strong, difficult feelings. And to be able to kind of widen our tolerance of that, to be with that, to validate ourselves, and to also make that conscious choice of, I can have these hard feelings without reacting in a way that might further, you know, disconnect me from my body or even possibly cause harm to it. So, you know, it's just a lot more fluid, a lot more complicated. And I think a lot of people, like, especially if you've stumbled upon like body positive movements, I notice with a lot of my clients, there's this really strong internal pressure of like, but I shouldn't feel like this. Like, maybe they're a provider and they're like, I work in this field. Like, so I should just feel fine about this. I shouldn't have to deal with this. And it's like, well, it's just a lot more complicated than that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I think I was watching one of your videos and you mentioned too that like it can add then you feel then shame about being not feeling super positive about your body in a given moment. And like that's like the last thing that anyone needs is then not just to feel bad about your body, but also to feel shame that you're not feeling the way you should. It's like this terrible spiral that you can get into.
Totally. And yeah, if you feel shame about shame, it's like you have to get through two layers of shame.
Right. I know. Talk about digging yourself out of a hole. So your podcast is named The Embodied and Well Mom Show, and you talk a lot about embodiment. So can you give some examples of what being embodied is and the benefits that that can have for mothers?
Yes, yes. So, you know, the idea of embodiment is really, you actually described it really well just a second ago, but it's like living from the neck down. I mean, not necessarily just from the neck down, but like bringing your whole body into your lived experience, allowing your physical body to become your home again. Like you said, Catherine, it's so common for us to just be living like in our thoughts, and our thoughts become, you know, everything and truth and all of this, you know. But what's going on in our physical bodies is actually really important and can give us so much support and guidance and insight. So like living in your body can be as simple as spending time outside, like barefoot on the grass or even concrete, and just taking a minute to notice like what that feels like for your feet, what that feels like for your body. For anyone who's sitting in a chair right now, taking a minute, and instead of just kind of listening to what we're saying, taking a minute to just notice, how is this conversation showing up in your body? Do you notice tension anywhere? Or do you notice like a relaxed feeling? What's it like to notice this chair is underneath you, like holding you up? Perhaps there's a back to your chair. What is it like to have a back, you know, something supporting your back? So just little practices of just even starting to ask, well, what's going on in my body right now, is a really tangible place to start. And looking for ways to make that also easier or more accessible. So like, especially in the conversation with body image, doing your best, which it's not accessible all the time, but like to wear clothes that fit your body the best that you can. There's nothing that'll take you probably quicker out of embodiment than like pants that feel too tight, you know, or a bra that feels too tight, because it's like this constant sort of discomfort and your brain's going to want to just get out of there. Like your brain's not going to want to hang out in there for very long. Mm-hmm. So like things like that, that I think are really actually taxing for moms during pregnancy and postpartum, because the changes are rapid. And even like beyond postpartum, I think there's this idea that you're only going through changes for like a year after a baby or like 2 years. Well, depending on like how long you're nursing or just depending on your personal body's hormones, you know, we continue to have kind of random and spontaneous changes ongoingly. And that can be really taxing from like a clothing perspective. So I always mention that when we mention embodiment, because it's something that is kind of tangible that we can do for ourselves to allow our bodies to maybe feel a little more like home.
Mm-hmm. That. Yeah. If you're having two kids, it's at least 5 to 6 years of like physical body changes. And then you think also you've now aged 6 to 7 years, right? And there's natural changes that happen physically with the body. Yeah, it's just it's always evolving. I think it's important to note with that embodiment too, is that it also opens you up to all sorts of pleasures that you can't access when you're just living in your head, right? Like feeling the sun on your skin and checking in with like deep breathing. Like those are things that can feel really amazing. And we miss out on those like feel good chemicals that are created when we are really practicing full mindfulness in our body in a given moment.
That is so true. And especially, I know this will not come out until May, but we're recording this during a time where everybody's pretty much in a global trauma with the COVID-19 shutdowns. And, you know, everyone is going through it in their own way, but we all have this kind of common connection in what is going on. And when we're in something like that, we can try so hard to address this in our minds, right? We can say like, think differently, you know, don't freak out, da, 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 da. And when you're in it and you're in it in a prolonged amount of time, that may not feel like something you can do. And so when you are thinking about embodiment and you're allowing yourself to touch down on what's kind of going on, you can do things like, this is going to feel different for everybody. Like it depends on kind of how, what kind of stress response you're in, but just for anyone who's listening, just to notice if any of these jump out at you is like, oh yeah, that would actually feel really good, because our bodies are all in this like stress response, almost like separate from our minds too. You could be thinking fine, but you're like, man, I've had this pit in my stomach for 3 weeks and won't go away. Mm-hmm. And so with the concept of embodiment, you know, you can think, okay, would it help for me to warm up one of those socks with rice in it and like put it on my belly or put it on my neck? Would it help to like take a blanket and wrap it around my shoulders? How would it feel good to like lay right now? Do I want to be like in the fetal position? Like, do I want to lay on my back? Do I want to do child's pose? Like, what is my body calling me to do right now? Because that stress response is also very much so physical. It's impacted by our brains, but it's also very physical. And so trying to address it just with our thoughts is not necessarily going to always, you know, comfort us, I guess. And so I think that's a really important piece in the context of like what is going on right now.
Yes. And I want to do all of those that you just listed. Like the rice, the sock with rice on my belly is one of my all-time favorite things to do, especially around my period, but like all the time. It is so comforting. So I'm just curious, what is your favorite way of being embodied? Do you have a go-to?
Lately, it has been like heat. Hot showers. I think the only way I got through the first week of this was like constantly warming up my heat pad for my shoulders. Mm-hmm. It felt like very grounding. Sometimes just like holding my children.
Yeah.
Noticing what that feels like in my body. I noticed actually the most acceptance for my belly when I'm holding like my 2-year-old in a way that reminds me of when he was a baby. Noticing like, oh yeah, that familiar feeling of like this kind of squishy belly and like it's his knees, you know, pushing up against it, just reminding me of that kind of postpartum time and just how soothing it is to have just to hold him, right? Mm-hmm. So I think things like that. Oh gosh, lately also I don't actually love running. I'll be honest, but during this time, going out for just like, you know, just like running for a couple minutes at a time, just noticing my body calling me to do that for short spurts of time has been really interesting as well. I'm usually just kind of like a slow walker.
No, but I love that point because I think that it's so true that our physical needs and the way that we will feel good in movement fluctuate so much. And so many people have such a rigid view of this is the way that I move. This is the way I exercise. And I, for one, go through periods where, yes, I want to be running. I want to be moving. I want to be like hiking up a mountain. To me right now, that's feeling really good too, to like be in the sun, hiking, feeling the power of my body. But then there are definitely cycles and seasons where that feels taxing to me. And so allowing it to be fluid and allowing, again, that relationship, if you're checking in with your body, it's going to tell you what is going to feel best for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you get this question a lot because I get it a lot too. Is, well, does that count? I don't know. Does that count as movement?
Or is that? Yes.
I'm like, I don't know. Who's counting? Who's? You should ask the counter.
Totally.
Let's call them.
I know. But that's also, it's like letting go of that pressure of, oh, I need to do this. I get a lot of people who are like, I need to do this to, you know, burn a certain amount of calories or stay a certain, looking a certain way. And I always, my answer, at least from my own personal experience, is when I operate that way, I tend to put myself into, I don't know, it's never been diagnosed, but like adrenal fatigue. Like if I overexercise in a point where, or I'm doing really intense exercises at a point when my body is telling me you need less, I get run down, I get sick, I get depleted. And so it's like, your body is telling you what you need. Listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with movement. Yeah. And that is totally, you have to practice embodiment for that, because otherwise it's just in your mind and our minds are going to say exactly what we're saying. It's like, but you're supposed to do it this way and you're supposed to do it this long and it's supposed to be this intense and you're supposed to, you know, it's like, oh, well, have you asked how that feels to your body?
No, so much pressure we put on ourselves. Mm-hmm. I wanted to speak to Lane with your kids too, because I do that as well. Like at night, I will lay like heart to heart with my kids when I'm putting them to bed and like kind of feel my heart beating against their heart beating. And it just fills my body with this like intense heat and energy and feels so good in a way that I am only able to access because I am a mother. And it's like so clear to me, like this is such a gift that I have these children because they allow me to access this part of my physical body. It's like take advantage of those little energy creators that are your little people around you.
So true. So yeah. True. I love that. I'm going to do that tonight.
It's fun. It feels really good. And they like melt into it, you know? Yeah. Okay. So let's shift a little bit to eating, because this is another big thing and a thing that many women spend much of their time thinking about and trying to control. So you call your approach to eating non-diet wellness. And I would just like to start with an understanding of what that is and what it isn't.
I guess we could start with what I consider dieting to mean. And I consider dieting to be any way of eating that leaves you feeling hungry, unsatisfied, leaves you questioning, do I really need this? Should I, you know, I wish I would have eaten way, you know, less than what I actually needed, that kind of things. Basically, any type of intake that asks you to totally ignore your body's needs, especially in amounts. I realize that there are definitely instances where somebody has a medical reason to have to eliminate a certain food due to an allergy or a medical condition. That's very real. And there's definitely a whole nother podcast, you know, we could go way down the rabbit hole with the difficulties of that. But non-diet wellness, the idea behind it is to really center your body and what its needs are. How much food do you need? How frequently does your body ask for food? What does it even feel like to feel hunger and fullness? And not only just the sense of, you know, grumbling in your belly, but a lot of people have certain like emotional and even like thought judgments in response to feeling hunger. Because if you've been on even one diet, quite a bit of impact on a like a brain and physiological level. And it kind of sets you up to be really sensitive to deprivation. Or maybe you felt like you were supposed to stay hungry. And so your thought process is like, oh, well, when I feel hunger, I want to try to push it off or manipulate it or whatever. And so really getting attuned to, oh, you know, when I feel hungry, I actually, my first response is not to really honor it, is to ignore it. Where did that come from? How old is that? How long have I been thinking about hunger that way? And how is that impacting my ability to meet my needs? So really, non-diet wellness is just centering the body, honing in on cues, understanding our relationship with food. Oftentimes, it requires some level of healing our relationship with food because we're all impacted by diets to one degree or another. And I actually will actually mention one thing again in the context of what's going on right now with the shutdown. I just want to highlight how powerful deprivation is, and even the idea of scarcity around food and how powerful it is and what the very normal and like human response to that. So a lot of people feel a lot of shame around like they've been on a diet and they go off a diet and they are feeling really out of control with food, or they might even describe it as like a binge or whatnot. Really observe with curiosity. What happened the moment we all started to sense that we might not be able to access enough food in the way that we were used to accessing it? We weren't even food depleted, most of us, at this moment. If you think back to those first few days, at least in the U.S. and really globally, where governments were starting to say, hey, this is schools are closing, you know, and you go to the grocery store and there's a ton of people at the grocery store and people are buying all kinds of things, right? Just noticing that the idea of, I might not have enough, what are you going to do? You're going to grab as much as you can. You're going to probably be even like a little bit unreasonable about it because you just don't know. You're trying to do your best to prepare for this potential of deprivation. And then you're also going to be buying things that provide you with calories and sustenance. So you're much more likely to skip the kale and go for the pasta because kale, you know, while it's great and it can increase the texture and, you know, enjoyment of your foods to some degree, is not going to get you very far if you're not sure that you're going to have enough food. And so, yeah, I just want to highlight like that and sort of invite listeners, if you've ever been on a diet, to just sort of see your experience with that. If it has ever mirrored that, to drop the judgment around it. That's a really, really important piece.
Yeah. What a powerful parallel that is that you just made, because I know the first time I walked into that grocery store and there was no chicken, there was no beef. We had plenty of food in our home and I still felt the anxiety rising. I felt like I need to get whatever I can get. I probably spent like $350 at the grocery store that day just because it was like, get whatever I can, you know? And so to think that diet culture has been such a prevalent part of our lives for so long that in many ways we are kind of almost always operating with a little bit of that sense of anxiety and need to get. That's so interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope it allows people to have a little more compassion for themselves and start to see it as like actually a pretty understandable physiological response, as opposed to I'm out of control. What's wrong with me? Why did I grab the Pop-Tarts and not the kale? You know, just it's part of that response. And the more we are using dieting to any degree as a guiding kind of approach to our intake, we're on some level inducing that deprivation and scarcity. And that is a really, really powerful thing. Human brains don't like that, understandably. It's a very uncomfortable and scary thing. It's just interesting to see when it's externally induced versus internally induced. And many of us who were going through that have also never been in an actual food insecure environment, you know, or if you have experienced food insecurity as a child or even an adult, it's that much more powerful too.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned relating, looking at your relationship to food, also that embodiment and really checking in with your body's cues. But what are some other ways that women can get started on this approach? Are there some simple practical things that they can do right now to start shifting their relationship?
Yes. There is one sort of overarching approach that many of us use in the non-diet space, and it's called intuitive eating. And it happens to be outlined by 10 principles. This doesn't mean you have to like do them all in order or anything like that. There's no magic to it in terms of that. It goes through like rejecting the diet mentality, making peace with food, discovering satisfaction and really kind of honoring hunger and fullness, learning how to cope with our emotions with kindness, movement from a perspective of joyful movement, and learning how to incorporate. They use the term gentle nutrition. We use it a lot in practice as well. It doesn't mean nutrition's not important. Intuitive eating and sort of the non-diet approach really liberalizes food, doesn't label them as good or bad. They might provide different nutritional values, but it doesn't make them like morally superior. It really is that looking at, you know, hey, certain foods are going to meet our needs. Like carrot cake is going to meet a certain need that carrots never will, and vice versa. and we might always say we love carrot cake, but it doesn't mean we eat carrot cake at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's just a really good example of like our bodies have different preferences and needs throughout the day. And, you know, learning how to incorporate certain nutritional guidelines and understanding of basic nutritional needs without kind of becoming rigid with it, or it becoming another kind of way to deprive, rather a way to like enhance and nourish, you know, from that perspective. So that's one way. I think I shared with you the link of my Busy Mom's starter guide, mm-hmm. Peace with Food. So that looks a lot at mindfulness. It gives moms an opportunity to practice mindfulness, you know, being with their bodies and minds and, you know, lived experience as they're eating and noticing what that's like. That's a key piece too.
Yeah. And we'll put that link to that in the show notes too, if anybody wants to download that. And we should say this is what you teach. So if you're looking, if that sounds like something that is something you need, then go check out Lindsay's website, which is also in the show notes, because she has Intuitive Eating Moms, where she gives all of those guidelines on how to actually incorporate intuitive eating into your life. And I think it's so important to note too how powerful this is, not just for yourself, but for your family, because as you shift the way you think about foods, then you are teaching your children to have this more healthy relationship. It's like you're able to break the cycle of the diet culture by doing the work on yourself.
Yeah, I think that's what I notice brings moms to this work, is getting to the point where they're starting to feed their kids solid food and they're reflecting on their relationship with food growing up or the way they were fed, and they're wanting to perhaps do that differently, but they're not sure how to do that or where to start. And also noticing like, huh, that kind of left me with some stuff I should probably like get some support for and learn more about, so that I can feel more confident with feeding. Kids challenge us to grow in so many ways, and it can bring us to the point of, you know, looking for support that perhaps we needed, you know, far before we became parents. But kids have a way, yeah, you know, nudging us in that direction.
For sure. Or they could just say that they just reveal all the shit that you're storing inside of you that was hidden from your eyes until you saw that little mirror that reflects it back to you, right?
It's literally what they are.
They really are. And that's, I mean, again, such a beautiful gift. Like we would just be going on with our lives with all of that stuff, carrying that baggage along with us, unless we have this thing that encourages us and motivates us to improve those relationships with all the things in our lives. Okay, so we're running out of time, but I do just want to bring up one question, because it just is such a clear follow-up to that. So all of this stuff that we're talking about really comes down to like being aware and being mindful and all of that. But we're moms and we're dealing with kids and chaos and inconsistency in our schedules and all of that. And so it all becomes harder to tap into our body's signals when we have that extra stress in our lives. So is there anything we can do to not get sidelined by this everyday stresses when we're working on ourselves in this way?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. You know, that is the reality of this, and all of that chaos and rushingness and busyness that is just going to be part of parenting life, I think to some degree, is it is going to impact our eating. You know, we might find ourselves eating really quickly or whatever. And it also can sometimes feel overwhelming as we're talking really kind of deeply, even, you know, in this conversation, to think, oh my gosh, I don't really know that I want to take all of that on right now. You know, even just starting with the basics of, you know what, for the next 4 weeks, I am going to really try to make sure that we are not only your kids, because we typically don't forget to feed our kids, typically, but making sure that you are feeding your body breakfast, lunch and dinner, and snacks when you're hungry. Like, and a lot of people think snacks are for kids. They aren't. Snacks are for humans.
I love and, some snacks.
You know, yeah. So making sure you're offering yourself opportunities to eat throughout the day, looking for really basic balance, like real basic, and we don't have to beat ourselves up if it's not there, but just looking, okay, understanding what carbohydrate, protein, and fat sources are, and is that showing up on a fairly regular basis? And what's it like when I have all three present? And just kind of starting there, like that is more than enough to start with, but it helps for your every cell in your body to start to be able to rely on the fact that it's going to get consistent offerings of food, and that it's going to start to, your body starts to sort of internalize like, okay, I'm going to get enough. I'm going to have another opportunity soon. That's actually a pretty huge undertaking. And the check-ins and the embodiment and things like that, this doesn't mean like, oh my gosh, I have to exist in this like extremely zen, mindful place. It can just be even just once a day, you know, just getting into the practice of just checking in, whether that be right when you wake up, whether that be when you sit down for dinner or before you go to bed, of just checking in and just getting into the practice. It is a practice. It's not like a, it's one thing I learned when I took a mindfulness-based stress reduction course is it's not a tool. It's not like a thing you achieve some sort of like superior level of, it's just a practice. And so that can show up at any point. It can show up when you're washing your hands. It can show up when you're putting your kids to bed or whatever. It doesn't have to be this like overwhelming constant thing.
Yes. Yes. So much yes. It's never going to be perfect. We shouldn't even be striving for perfection. And I think what jumped out to me was like, we actually have a lot of rhythms and routines in place for those of us that have kids. And if we're home with our kids, especially, you're already feeding them. You're already giving them snacks. You're probably already giving them some downtime and rest time. It's like if we can just kind of tap into those rhythms and routines for ourselves, you're going to be in a really good place, probably much better than when you just ignore, because your needs are not that different than your kids in reality.
Yep, exactly. It's just they're more honest.
Yeah.
Their reactions are more literal and honest and obvious.
And they ask for what they actually want. Oh, well, thank you so much for this conversation. Will you just let everybody know where they can find you on the internet?
Yes. The website is intuitiveeatingmoms.com. And on there, you can easily press, there's a free stuff button right on the homepage. And you can see, I have a postpartum body image booster, which works for any stage. And then that busy monster guide, and then another free tool for helping with what I actually just was talking about, with getting kind of a routine going with grocery lists and grocery shopping and kind of what's coming for the week and that kind of thing. So you can check that out there. And then on Instagram, I'm Lindsay_RD. If you happen to be local in San Diego, I also have a private practice at nutritioninstincts.com. But most of what we're talking about, you can find resources on the intuitiveeatingmoms.com site.
Thank you. I always love talking to you, Lindsay. Thank you so much for taking your time to be here today.
You too, Catherine. I love talking with you, and I can't wait to hear all of the episodes on your show.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Rise Rooted. You can find all the links mentioned in today's show at our website, brbyoga.com, as in be right back. And if you're looking for support to heal your post-baby body, please head to our website. There you'll find our courses for core, pelvic floor, and hip health, as well as free masterclasses and blog posts designed to teach you how to feel your best in your post-baby body. And yes, that even applies to you if you had your baby 30 years ago. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or posting a screenshot of today's episode to Instagram. Doing so makes my day and helps other moms find the show. Thanks so much for being here. Till next time.